Washington gets the sense about how to unify men. He really does it in the Revolutionary War, where this ragtag bunch of soldiers that is not well-equipped, not well-trained, and he inspires these men, figures out how to train them, get someone to train them, figures out how to get them sheltered and fed, and inspires them that they can actually win and are fighting for liberty. And they do. So I would argue that that history provides the sense of getting men together despite being in tough circumstances.
Hey, everybody, that is Fox anchor Brett Baer talking about his new book on George Washington. It's a really interesting book and a really fascinating conversation with him about George Washington and the role he played in the Constitutional Convention. But before we get to that, I'm on tour with my off-Broadway show, Permission to Speak. I'm really excited about this. We're starting a national tour November 11th in Monmouth, New Jersey at the Pollock Theater. November 11th, Monmouth, New Jersey. Then we go to Skokie, Illinois for two shows on November 18th at the North Shore Center for the Performing Arts. December 29th, we're in Orlando, Florida at the Dr. Phillips Center for the Performing Arts. February 2nd, in Sellersville, Pennsylvania at the Sellersville Theater. Also, December 1st, I'm doing stand-up at the Record Bar in Kansas City. So if you're in that area, please come on out. Really cool venue. You can see all of this and get all the information on my website, paulmercurio.com. Go there, get tickets, come out. I'm really proud of my off-Broadway show. It is not stand-up. It's something different involving the audience and a really cool set, theater set, directed by Frank Oz. So hope you all can make it. This conversation with Brett was really cool. Enjoy that. And before we get to that, I ended up in the hospital again because of going to Detroit. That happened last year. Last year was a heart thing. This year, I was laughing so hard on stage, I took the microphone and whacked my right thigh, gave myself what I thought was just a Charlie horse. Turns out I broke blood vessels, caused blood clotting, and it spread throughout my upper leg and down into my lower leg, and I could barely bend my leg. And then I flew to New York, then to Chicago. And I'm in Chicago talking to my doctor in New York saying, there's something really wrong with my leg. She didn't know I was flying. And I described to her what I did. And the first thing she said was, whatever you do, don't fly, because you could clot and then you could die. I ended up flying because I had to go to Dallas for shows. And the whole time I'm just praying not to have a stroke. And although I did think it would be pretty cool because it would definitely make the news that the plane was diverted because some guy had a stroke because he whacked his leg with a microphone. Yeah, that would be funny. I don't care what anybody says. That's funny. Ended up in Dallas where I had shows there and went to the hospital and they amputated my leg. And so now I hop on one leg while I do stand up. It's a little distracting, but my left leg is so ripped right now. Now, they just said I got to rest it and everything else. So you don't have to send flowers or money or food, but if you want to, just send money. All right. Enjoy Brett Baer. Really interesting conversation about George Washington and this book he's written. And please check out my tour dates, especially for my Permission to Speak theater show. And enjoy Brett. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. My guest, Fox News' chief political anchor, has a new book out, To the Rescue, The Constitution, George Washington and the Fragile American Experiment. A terrific new book that looks into an aspect aside of George Washington that not a lot of people have done in history. Brett Baer, great to have you on the show, Brett.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So what I thought was really interesting is that what a challenge. There's so much been written about George Washington is like, how do you find sort of a fresh angle? And you did. You know, we know so much about him as a general that, you know, leading us in defeating the British, but we see through this book, you know, how central he was to not only winning the war, but, you know, the Constitutional Convention that followed quickly thereafter. And talk about how you decided to sort of pursue this line on George and what struck you about sort of how important he was in the days after the war was over.
Yeah. So, you know, this is the fifth in my presidential book series. And each one of these books, and by the way, I'm addicted to this process, finding nuggets in history and trying to put the reader, you know, in the place, in the narrative so that you see it firsthand. And so I did Dwight Eisenhower and Ronald Reagan and FDR, and last book was Ulysses S. Grant. And this time I went all the way back to the founding and George Washington. And you're right, there have been a lot of books about Washington. But this is a soda straw look at a moment in time. This is after the Revolutionary War. The British have been defeated. The country is kind of moving forward, but we're really at each other's necks. We're fighting each other. Each state is battling, fighting tax collectors, fighting different elements. We're held together loosely by the Articles of Confederation, but it's not working. It's not sufficient. And a lot of people at the time say, you know, forget it. Let's go back to British rule. That's how bad it got. And so at that moment, a constitutional convention is called in May of 1787. And Washington has been expressing frustration, writing to his friend James Madison, saying, we're either a united people or we are not. If we are not, let us no longer act a farce by pretending to it. So they tap Washington to be the head of this constitutional convention. He obviously led the revolutionary forces. And I argue that as this convention gets underway, he says, I'm not going to do it if we are just tweaking the Articles of Confederation. They wanted to just put some teeth into what was already there. He says, you have to rip that up root and branch and start anew. And he heads up this convention, and we get out of it, out of dissent and trying to find common ground, the U.S. Constitution, that obviously is the greatest legal document we've seen providing liberty to any country. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, what's amazing to me is there are parallels you draw to today and how divisive we are and people are at each other, you know, politically, and, you know, that it's been messy since the start, which I think is a good thing about politics in our country, right? Because it can be messy, right? It's not just one voice, one rule. But, you know, clearly a great military mind. Where do you, in the research that you did for the book and really learning more about this side of George Washington, like, where did he get the skill set to be able to navigate the political waters, pull people together? He was clearly a unifier at a critical time in the country. Is he born with that? That ain't something you learn in a classroom. You know what I mean? So how?
That's right. Yeah, I think that's a great question. So first of all, his early life, there's not a ton about it, but we did dig deep and found a number of different stories and anecdotes. He loses his father at 11 years old. That forces him to grow up very quickly. He is a part of a militia, takes over the post of his stepbrother, and joins the Virginia militia. So he's basically a British soldier early on. And in his experiences, he has some fits and starts. He kind of screws up numerous times, but they keep promoting him. And he gets this sense about how to unify men. He really does it in the Revolutionary War, where this ragtag bunch of soldiers that is not well equipped, not well trained, has tatters for uniforms. At one point in Valley Forge, you know, they have bloody feet because the shoes are falling apart in the midst of winter of Valley Forge. And in that crucible of that time, Washington steps up and inspires these men, figures out how to train them, get someone to train them, figures out how to get them sheltered and fed, and inspires them that they can actually win and are fighting for liberty. And they do. So I would argue that, you know, that history provides the sense of getting men together despite being in tough circumstances. This book, you know, and this moment when he deals with big issues like states' rights and federalism, representation of big states and small states, manages not by force of speech. You know, he's not a fiery speaker like Alexander Hamilton, not because he's like this elite scholar like Thomas Jefferson. He just has this steady, thoughtful presence that is the indispensable man in the room. And he adds gravitas. But more importantly, he works the room outside of the convention and gets them to talk about coming together on something.
Yeah, you know, it's all the more amazing. You know, he loses his dad when he's young and all, you know, doesn't really have a role model really to look up to. And yet he figures all of this out. And one could argue that because he did lose his dad, that there's a compassion in him to keep people, to bring people together, right? Because that maybe wasn't in his life and it was something that was lacking. And who did you find his political allies to be? I mean, I know he supported Alexander Hamilton's economic plan. He had John Adams as his vice president, but it didn't seem like Adams had much of a substantive role. Who were some of the other political allies that maybe we wouldn't know about? And who were some of his, I don't want to say enemies, because he's the kind of guy that didn't seem to have enemies, but who are the guys on the other side of the table that he had to sort of massage and work with, if you will, that weren't necessarily seeing eye to eye with him on things?
Yeah. His closest friend really was Henry Knox, who ends up being his Secretary of War in his first cabinet. He is close with Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton. Hamilton is sort of almost like a son to him. Ben Franklin is a good friend. He's a genius and has a lot of charisma. But he, you know, he has fallings out with people like George Mason, who has a problem with the Constitution, and Patrick Henry thinks is a little bit too fiery at times. But for the most part, he doesn't exclude anyone, straight out. And all of the writings and all the research that we find, he is someone who gives somebody a chance and has this mentality of listening first to their point of view and then kind of making a decision. He's the stories in here really are kind of nuggets that give you a sense of who he is. His closest confidant really is Martha Washington. And he desperately wants to get back to her at every turn. Every time he's called up, he just wants to get back to Mount Vernon. And he expresses that numerous ways, numerous times. When they finally, you know, get to hammering out the Constitution, then ratifying it, and obviously he's unanimously selected as the first president. Remember, there is nobody's writing him a note in the Oval Office desk telling him what to do.
Right.
Nobody's passing a torch to him.
Right.
He is the torch. But he goes to New York to take office as president, and Martha did not accompany him. And she was planning to join him later, but was in no rush because she was taking care of grandchildren at Mount Vernon. And Washington finds life really chaotic without her. And he finally says to his private secretary, Tobias Lear, that he really needs her. And they conspire about how to get her up there. She really likes seafood. So they send word through a nephew that every night oysters and shrimp and lobster are a big part of the New York, you know, scene where George Washington is,
right,
and often go untouched, they say. And eventually, the seafood may have been the thing that drew her up there. She eventually made it up to New York.
Well, my wife is not a fan of lobster, so that would not have worked for me. I would have had to figure something else out. But there you go. Food can solve a lot of things. I mean, what's interesting about George Washington is, like, he didn't really want to be president. He was done. He was exhausted from everything he did in the war. He wanted to just go home. He's like, I'm done. And then people start calling him, like, I can. And it was really like the country's first grassroots movement to bring a political figure to power. And he was reluctant. And they, you know, Hamilton and others really worked on that. What do you think convinced him? How did he convince himself that he needed to do this? Did he see the perils coming up and that he felt like he was the only one that could deal with it? Or where did that come from?
Yeah, I mean, he did and was convinced. And each time, by the way, he was given the commands, he said, I don't think I'm up to the task. When he's given the head of the Constitutional Convention, he says, I don't think I can live up to this moment. You know, I may not be.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but can you imagine anybody doing that today? Like, There are people running that should have no business running. I can't imagine anybody having the humility today to go, no, I'm good. I'm going to just hang out here and eat lobster. You know, like it's amazing. It's amazing. But anyway, go ahead.
It is amazing. And so each time he comes to it from that position, like, I'm probably not the man for this, but each time he is the man for this. And I think that, you know, there was this sense that something greater than himself and what he wanted to do. And he felt that for the good of the country, that would be the case. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. We're talking about the executives and, you know, they're hammering out what this country is going to look like and how everything's going to be run. He's the first president, so he has a lot of leeway about how it looks. But the committee itself, as they're making it, they want to come up with the name, what they're going to be calling the chief executive of the country. And Adams is on this committee, and he says it should have some really great title. And he wants to make the title His Highness, the President of the United States of America and Protector of the Rights of the Same. You know, and everybody looks around and Madison says, are you nuts? We just left the monarchy. And you're not going to make it His Highness of blah, 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 blah. And they finally argue about it and Washington weighs in and it just becomes the president.
Oh, God. Amazing. States. I would love to talk to you more about this. I know you have to jump, but maybe we can set up a time to do a little bit more of this and talk about the world and everything that's going on. I think you do a great job at Fox. I think you're really balanced and fair and you do terrific interviews. So anyway, it's great to have you on and maybe we connect again. To the rescue, the Constitution, George Washington and the Fragile American Experiment, Brett Baer. Good luck. Best of luck on the book. It's great. Everyone should go out and get it. And we'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks so much.
There you go. That's Brett Baer. Really good guy. Really interesting conversation about George Washington. Again, check out my website, paulmercurio.com, for my tour dates. For permission to speak, I'm going to be November 11th in Monmouth, New Jersey at the Pollock Theater, November 18th at the North Georgia Center for the Performing Arts in Skokie, Illinois, December 29th at the Dr. Phillips Center for the Performing Arts in Orlando, February 2nd in Sellersville, and I'm doing stand-up December 1st at the Record Bar in Kansas City, which is a really cool music venue and comedy venue. So thanks for listening to the podcast, everybody. We'll see you next week.